Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, December 9th.
Which is my birthday, by the way.
Oh, well, there
so
we go.
We did the APEC protest 2 weeks ago, and now it's my birthday. It's the exact date of my birthday.
All right, well, happy birthday, Peter.
Yeah, okay. So I'll be talking about... I'm 60.
Are you going to...
I'm 62. Yeah. And so you really start... I remembering I was born late... 1962, December 9th, 1962. So I start remembering 1966. Uh-huh. And I'm going to read a bit from Time Magazine, Man of the Year, they called it in those days. It was 25 and under. So I was involved with that story, I guess, wasn't I? You know, sometimes Time Magazine says, oh, the American soldier is the man of the year. Or they even had everybody. They had you. They had like a mirror thing. I forget what year that was. So I was on Man of the Year twice already. So for Time.
Amazing.
I mean, Taylor Swift, I guess, was too. I think she was alive when they had that mirror thing, you know. So I'm equal to what I feel.
All right. Well, my name is Magnus Teeble. I'm your other host for today. We got lots of good stuff lined up. A segment on... by our own Danny Nesvaradani on the use of personal use evictions in rentals, which is a rising trend. And if you watch anything online, discussions around rental housing, you'll see that it is a situation that comes up often and sometimes in situations as rents have increased greatly over the recent years. You know, sometimes landlords are trying to force people out to enable them to raise rents a lot more than they might otherwise. Anyway, some research has been done, and Danny's going to talk to us about that. Vancouver Island marmots, who have been on the endangered list for many, many years, are having a great year this year, and we have a report about that from our friends in Nanaimo. And we have a special Gardening with Embark segment about what you can Christmas gifts for your favorite gardener, and you're going to talk about
I'm going to talk about the 1966 Persons of the Year. They had Man of the Year. It's actually Persons 25 and under, and it came out in January 5th, 1967. But they kind of predate magazines. They, mm-hmm. they do it so it's on the stands.
Right? Yeah.
So it's very late 1966. They said, this is the People of the Year. Of course, they still call Man of the Year.
Yeah.
And also, I got a result for somebody who attended those anarchist meetings over at UBC. And they may be coming for a show. I haven't seen them in person yet again, and I'll just say a little bit about this.
Okay.
So that may be in the future. They're saying January, probably.
Amazing. All right. This is Danny's report on some research being done on personal use evictions in the rental sector across Canada.
Reporting from Burnaby, British Columbia, this is Danny Nesvaradani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. According to recent research conducted by Daniel Kerrigan, a postdoctorate fellow with the Department of Geography at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, the rate of personal use evictions has skyrocketed in recent years within numerous provinces throughout Canada, including British Columbia, Quebec, and Ontario. To learn more on why this is happening, CJSF was able to speak with Kerrigan and hear her speak on the reasons behind this rise in personal use evictions. The first question that we had to ask was, what are personal use evictions? Here's what Daniel Kerrigan had to say.
So like own use, personal use, landlord use, those are all kind of thrown around in the mix. And what it is it's a legal justification for eviction, which enables a non-corporate or individual landlord to move themselves or a family member into a tenant-occupied unit to terminate the existing rental contract. Mm-hmm. So in other words, like landlord or their close family usually, again, this like differs based on what jurisdiction you're looking at because all of the rules are sort of different, are able to terminate an existing lease to move themselves or a close family member into a rental unit that's occupied.
During our conversation with Daniel Kerrigan, we asked her to expand on some of her research findings regarding personal use evictions.
There's this really, really clear trend in Canada's three largest provinces that own use evictions are just absolutely skyrocketing, right? So in British Columbia and Quebec, own use evictions, the number of filings, and we're using own use eviction filings, which show landlord intent basically to evict. But basically what we've seen in this data is between 2019 and 2022 in Quebec and British Columbia, the number of own use evictions doubled, filings. And in Ontario, it doubled between 2018 and 2022.
Afterwards, we asked Kerrigan if her research yielded any possible reasons as to why this stark increase in personal use evictions is occurring.
What the initial evidence really points to is it's a lot of bad faith and fraudulent evictions. Mm-hmm. And it points to the fact that own use evictions right now, as they are in Ontario, as they are in British Columbia and Quebec, represent a relatively easy way for a landlord who's interested in getting higher new market rents to be able to evict their tenant. And so kind of like the things pointing to a lot of these being fraudulent is one of our big findings was that while they're skyrocketing in these provinces with strong rent control protections, they seem pretty steady in provinces where there's not a lot of tenant protections, which suggests that landlords aren't engaging in own use evictions because they don't need to, because they have other ways to kind of already get at this market rate rent.
This assertion stems from an aspect of Daniel Kerrigan's research where she interviewed various tenants throughout Canada that were experiencing evictions. Half of the interviewees included in the research were experiencing personal use evictions.
And about half of them overall were people who'd been own use evicted. You know, that was pretty steady in the three largest provinces, and it was way, 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 way less in New Brunswick, which again has very few rent control protections. And then, you know, you see articles from time to time as well, just in the media, documenting cases where it seems very much in bad faith. But from tenants, we heard, you know, systematic evictions. So people would see a landlord move themselves or their family members, or at least suggest that's what they were doing, into the units of a building with the longest standing tenant, and then the next longest standing tenant, and then the next, which is suggestive of going through the tenants paying the least rent and systematically kicking them out.
Lastly, we asked Kerrigan if her research provided any potential solutions for the rise of personal use evictions in provinces such as British Columbia. One of these potential solutions that she provided pertained to residential tenancy branches, or RTBs, implementing stricter regulations requiring landlords to provide evidence for personal use intent.
Before the landlord is allowed to send this notice themselves to the tenant, they have to go to the RTB and they have to have evidence. It's like, I need this apartment. I don't have alternatives. Like, this is something I actually require. Here's all the evidence I have. And so that would provide the advantage of then making it a lot easier for the RTB to check up on that, incentivizing tenants to challenge this. And it would also, I have a little bias here, but it would improve the quality of like the data as well, because you would actually see how many of these there are instead of just hoping like the tenant reports it so it gets contested and then it shows up in the filings data.
Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This piece would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also listen to this piece on frequencynews.ca.
And thanks for Danny for that report. next up, we have a report about Vancouver Island marmots. Vancouver Island marmots. And it, I'm sure it goes, tells you a bit more in the report, though, have been on the endangered list, endangered species list for many, many years and are unique to the Vancouver Island ecosystem. And apparently they're having a good year. Here's a report from Lauren McKenzie.
This is a CHY News update. A baby boom has taken over Mount Washington. As a critically endangered species, the Vancouver Island marmot welcomed over 100 newly born pups. As its name suggests, the Vancouver Island marmot is found only on Vancouver Island, mainly on Mount Washington and in the Strathcona Park area. 20 years ago, the species faced near extinction with only 38 marmots left remaining in the wild. Biologists like the late Dr. Andrew Bryant followed the severe decline in the marmot population and was one of the founders of the Marmot Recovery Foundation in 1999. The foundation has led the work to save this special species, where now more than 300 marmots are accounted for. In the beginning, the foundation built a facility at Mount Washington, where with support from the Calgary Zoo and Toronto Zoo, they bred and released the marmots. As well, the foundation also works to restore habitat, supplement feeding other marmots, and track the population and environment threats it face. Adam Taylor is the executive director of the foundation and joined in the work to save the Vancouver Island marmots after years of working in animal conservation. He says he's worked with other endangered species, such as slugs, snakes, bats, and owls. But another thing that stood out to Taylor about the marmots was that while a lot of endangered species are going to need conservation efforts forever as their habitats disappear, there is still hope for saving the marmots.
I really wanted to work on a species where I really felt like we could finish the job, so to speak, right? Where we could actually recover a species. And that, so when the marmot position came up, you know, I knew about marmots and had sort of course, been keeping tabs on their recovery as it was in my field. And I knew that this was a species that there really is hope for a real recovery.
He says conservation work can be very bleak, as many animals like the caribou drop drastically in population. But animals like the marmots show the importance of the work they do and keep the motivation going.
So in Canada, there is literally one species in all of Canada where we can say conservation action has saved this species from extinction. And that's the marmot. That's it. That's our one species that we can really be confident that conservation has prevented an extinction.
Currently, the marmots are hibernating and won't be awake until April or May of next year. The marmots hibernate for about 5 to 6 months every year. Taylor admits that at the start of the 2024 season, he was worried that the low snow levels would affect the habitat, but it ended up being a fantastic year for the species.
I will admit, when the season started, snow levels were really low, and we were really concerned that we'd experience a drought this summer, but as we all experienced, in fact, we had a lot of rain this summer. And as much as that wasn't as much fun as we'd like for us, for the marmots, it was fantastic news because it meant that their meadows were green and lush, full of food. And they responded by having lots and lots and lots of babies.
In 2024, 108 pups were born, beating the last record of just under 80 born in 1 year. While the overall population for the Vancouver Island marmot for this year is not finalized yet, in 2023, 301 marmots were observed by the foundation, a steep increase from the 204 marmots that were observed in 2022. Taylor says they cannot predict what the population growth could look like for the marmots going ahead, as drought and weather play a huge part in the marmots' lives. But next year, they predict a decrease in the number of marmot pups being born, which Taylor says is not overly concerning news. This is because, as Taylor says, marmots tend to only give birth every other year due to the strain of hibernation it puts on the female marmot bodies.
So they're one of the few species, they hibernate for longer than they're awake many years. To do that, they have to really increase their body condition going into hibernation. They have to get nice and chubby before they go into hibernation. And then when they come out of hibernation, they probably lost 30% or more of their body mass.
This means only female marmots in good condition are able to breed, leading the rest to wait until the next season. As there seems to be hope for the Vancouver Island marmots, Taylor says there's still work that needs to be done to ensure the marmot population continues. Taylor says donations to the Marmot Recovery Foundation makes a difference in the work they are able to do, as 75% of the funding for the work comes from donations. Along with just donating to the foundation directly, marmots can be adopted. There is Adopt a Marmot Club, where one-time or monthly donations will get the donor a personalized marmot adoption certificate, a poster of a Vancouver Island marmot, and receive special recovery project newsletters and end-of-the-year reports about the adopted marmot. But all marmots adopted stay with their colonies in the wild under the watch of the Marmot Recovery Foundation. Taylor also says to keep an eye out for marmots, and if one is seen, report it to the Marmot Recovery Foundation so they can observe the marmot and move it to a better location if needed.
So a couple years ago, there was a farmer who phoned us from Arrington and said, I think I've got a Vancouver Island marmot in my field, which I have to admit, it sounded unlikely, but he sent photos and there was a Vancouver Island marmot in his field. So we were able to go out, we were able to trap that marmot, translocate it to another colony where we thought there was an appropriate potential mate. And sure enough, that marmot, you know, it's now in Strathcona Park.
Currently, the best location to see the Vancouver Island marmots is at the ski slopes on Mount Washington during the summertime, where the largest colony of marmots is located. Taylor asks if someone is going to look for the marmots to not bring any dogs, as the marmots will view them as predators. As well, Taylor says if a marmot stands up and starts to whistle, then it's time to back up and give a little bit of space. The Vancouver Island marmot can be recognized by its chocolate brown fur with white patches on its nose, chin, forehead, and chest. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
This is Bird Note. Some bird species look almost identical, creating headaches for birders just starting out. One example? In the interior of North America, flocks of Canada geese might also have another species called cackling geese mixed in. They look almost the same. The cacklers are just smaller. Then there's whole groups of related birds that all look alike. Even experienced birders have to take a close look at little sandpipers all scurrying around in a wetland to know who's who. It's easy to get discouraged and think you're the only one confused by lookalike birds, but all birders get stumped now and then. Try seeing it as a mystery to solve rather than a test you have to pass. If you don't sort out two lookalike birds today, check your field guide and get them tomorrow. And keep in mind some basic tips. If species look similar, could they have different voices, like the Canada goose's brassy honks? And the nasally yelps of the cackling goose? Can you snap a photo or make a recording to review later? Gathering all the clues you can will help you solve the mystery. For Bird Note, I'm Jonies Franklin. Bird Note is supported by the Tuttleman Foundation and by generous listeners like you.
Sakamami has a new record out called Evergreen, and this is the lead-off track from that. This is Lost.
This is about 3 minutes.
Lost from Soccer Mommy. Soccer Mommy is from Tennessee, and that's from a new album called Evergreen.
Okay. I want to talk about a bit of a side note. Was the marmots?
Marmots.
Have you heard about the super pigs that are taking over the North American continent?
I have not heard about them.
Okay. You might think this is not the truth, but these farmers were crossing a boar, was ordinary farm pig. But what they didn't realize, they were going to make a smart pig. A smart pig
and
that was
pigs are pretty smart already.
Well, they made one smarter that knew how to get the hell out of there.
Right.
There are as many of these pigs in the state of Texas as there are people in the Metro Vancouver area. And I first saw it on W5, I think, about 3 years ago, but I checked it up since.
Yeah.
And one person said, in the report, he said, 10 years ago, I told these people about this. They thought I was talking about Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. He said, we could have got rid of them 10 years ago. Now they're going to last 1,000 years. So it's what's called an invasive species. In Florida, they have these iguanas that people have as pets. And supposedly in some parts of Florida, you walk down the street, it's all there. Yeah. So an invasive species is one that's actually, you change the habitat, but he succeeds better than the older one that he had.
Yeah, sometimes they don't have natural predators or,
So, but those pigs just maybe... Planet of the Pigs, maybe. I don't know.
Hope maybe somebody will make the movie.
Yeah, I don't. But I. But you can check. But the funny thing is that on Vancouver Island they have them, which means that a farmer must have bred them, and they ruined a golf course supposedly. So, and they may eat those marmots sooner or later.
Well, hopefully they're not out here yet.
Well, they are in British Columbia. I mean, on the mainland somewhere. I haven't seen one of them, for me, kind of bowl me over. But oh, by the way, the other thing about them is that the parents teach the children how to avoid bullets. Because in some cases, they have people in a helicopter shooting them.
Right.
But the kids get taught by their parents. Here's how to avoid that.
These are pretty... kids and pig parents.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, even the little children pigs know how to avoid a lot of this. They get about 50%, but that's about it.
Interesting. So have you been following the story of this United Healthcare killing that took place last week?
I've heard about it.
Yeah, well, on Wednesday morning, Brian Williamson, Brian Thompson, who was the CEO of United Healthcare, was gunned down by a masked gunman on the sidewalk in New York City on his way into their annual general meeting. And of course, it picked up lots of the news. The gunman got away on a bicycle pretty cleanly. And I guess what I want to, you know, it was quite wild following the story online through the rest of the week. Mostly because there was so little outrage about the killing itself, so little sympathy for the CEO, and so much sympathy for the shooter. In online spaces. And I'm not talking about, you know, the darker parts of the web where, you know, 4chan or 8chan or other places like that are kind of, you know, the dark places of the web. This is in you know, over the course of days in very mainstream sources, you know, on Reddit, in popular mainstream subs, you know, in other online spaces, in newspaper and media comment sections where... people almost cheering for, well, they are cheering for him for the shooter to get away.
But there's something I just want to make clear. Have they caught him? Do they know who he is?
Well, apparently this morning there's some reports that they're questioning a person of interest in Pennsylvania. Who knows what that means? But, you know, it's usual, you know, when something like this happens, you know, there's always going to be a certain, you know, particularly something like this involving corporations and stuff like that, there's always going to be people sort of, you know, edgelords and whatnot, you know, oh, yeah, yeah, it's awesome that this happened, or, you know. But usually there's quite a strong pushback against any of that kind of attitude of support for something like this. And that's, that pushback is almost completely lacking, you know, in this case. And a lot of what goes has gone with that lack of pushback is a lot of talk about the problems of private health care in the States and private insurance. Because one of the things that's come out is this company, United Healthcare, has the highest rate of claims denials in U.S. healthcare, with something like 30% of claims denied. And, you know, another story about how they introduced this sort of AI system for dealing with claims that had a 90% claims rejection. And that has also become a lot of the you know, the conversation online is that, you know, the way healthcare has in the United States, you know, has worked, you know, is really doesn't really serve people, and that people, and I think the larger takeaway is that people are really pissed off down there about this. And it's interesting that we just came through, you know, an election in the United States where healthcare was hardly an issue at all, and, you know, and it doesn't get talked about in political space as much. It doesn't get talked too much in the media, really. And yet, obviously, you know, based on this kind of reaction, this lack of sympathy, you know, for the victim in this shooting, you know, the support for the shooter, you know, the drawing the connection between that, you know, in denying claims like this at such a high level, you know, the CEO was himself responsible for many deaths of people who didn't get, you know,
well,
deaths and ruined lives, you know, deaths from not getting care, and, you know, ruined lives from the financial devastation that comes from uncovered medical bills.
Yeah, well, that's partly it, you see. Now, there's the issue of, like, having people shoot people on the street leads to kind of, even they may even get the wrong person, or they may, some the bullet may go to someone else. So for me, okay, I'm against that because of public safety and so on. But I think what it is that, well, they're killing people too. So maybe that's sort of where it comes in.
And that's a lot of the discussion. It's like, okay, you know, okay, this guy shouldn't have done this, but, you know, many people saw him as striking a blow, you know, for the public against these companies because they're killing people too. Now, you know, we can't, this isn't how we can operate, you know, if we want to have healthy democracies. You know, we can't have people taking
things
into their own hands and trying to mete out what they consider justice like this. But we also can't ignore, when we look at this reaction, you know, the great deal of anger that clearly is bubbling beneath the surface around this issue, and perhaps also just the issue of, you know, income inequality and the sort of power accumulation that's happening in, you know, with corporations and, you know, the very rich sort of manager class of companies.
Well, the shooter is a type of anarchist in a way, you could argue. Like, he's saying, I said a type because there's many types, which will, in the following weeks, we'll go over them. But so he's a type of anarchist, I would. You know, it's funny that the person who killed President McKinley in 1901, supposedly one of the Hearst papers advocated the assassination, and the guy read it and said, "Oh, sounds like a good idea." The problem was Randolph Hearst, who they based the film Citizen Kane on. He's called Charles Foster Kane in it, but he had so many papers. It was like, oh, one of them had, one columnist had advocated it. So, no, it's not a good thing, but there's sort of a, you can see why people are sympathetic, you know.
Mm-hmm. One of the other thing is interesting about the discussion online, you know, first off, as I say, is the sort of unanimity of the opinion in that there's so little, you know, sympathy for the corporations or the individual, and such pushback against anyone who tries to push that position, but also a certain unanimity amongst people on the left and the right in this. You know, it typically, you know, on, you know, almost anything online, political online, you know, people just sort of take up sides, and you're, you know, if you're on the left or a liberal or you're the right or a conservative, and it's like there's no meeting of the minds these days, and, you know, argue. And you're not seeing that online either. You know, people in conservative spaces are angry and unsympathetic, as are people in liberal or progressive spaces are angry and unsympathetic.
No, Magnus, I'm a bit, I guess I'm more concerned because I live in the Metro Vancouver. I live in the Lougheed Mall area, and I go downtown. There was an incident where the police at the 7-Eleven across from the main central library had an incident.
Yeah.
And there was actually not only that. There was some other person had just punched somebody out of nowhere. So, I mean, I guess this one, I'm sort of, because we can't really be chauvinistic about ourselves, we're actually having some incidences, whatever reason it is. Oh, and I'm going to add one more thing. I was hearing the competition, CBC Radio, this morning. They were talking about how people that get cancer in Canada wind up having to pay for a lot of stuff, and that's not covered here. So right. We got problems too.
So one final thing I wanted to say around this issue too is when you look at that, this online reaction and the fact that I think part of it comes from the fact that there hasn't, since the, you know, the Obama, you know, bringing in Obamacare 15 years ago, there hasn't been in the States anyway, a real, you know, any much of a discussion around further reform of healthcare. But obviously people are very upset about it, you know, more broadly. And sometimes when I think about, when you look at this kind of reaction and you see how it spans across the left and the right, in some ways it kind of explains, you know, Trump's victory too, because I don't think, you know, all these folks who are, you know, commenting online that want a whole lot of people to start running around shooting people, you know, for political purposes and, you know, taking out people here and there.
Well, I looked into
but it. I think it does represent a great deal of anger. And it seems like if you have no other avenues to have this conversation, then anything that seems to advance it, even if it's, you know, as awful as a murder.
But what I want to
is I'm not quite finished my point. You know, is something they not to be condemned, you know, because anything is better than nothing. And sometimes I wonder in the Trump victory too, you know, one thing you could say is one thing that Trump promised was disruption and change, and one thing the Democrats promised for the most part with Biden and Harris was kind of the continuation of the status quo. And I wonder how many people voted for Trump just because it was going to be changed. Lots of people have said that, and they didn't, you know, any change, even if it was going to make things worse, was better than just riding along doing the same old thing.
Well, what I want to interject was some people really thought, well, but the slang term is Obamacare. That's not specifically what it is. But, and I actually heard, at the Bellingham Station used to have Sean Hannity on the radio.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with Sean Hannity a lot, but they were bringing up some issues with it that it wasn't working. It wasn't, they weren't getting but the Canadian system. In a way, and they were, and for some people, just felt, well, this is not working out for me. I'm going to say something else.
Yep.
Dwight D. Eisenhower in the late 50s attempted to have Canada not go towards a socialized medicine, which he failed doing. But he wanted to stop Canada from having it. So that's another thing.
I wonder if they thought that would influence events in the States. Obviously, it didn't, because we're 60 plus years later, and it still hasn't changed a lot. Okay.
We got something for Jaggi, because Jaggi is part of the community garden over in Montreal.
All right.
So maybe this guy's an anarchist too, this planter of plants.
All right. Well, let's turn to a more upbeat topic.
Christmas plants.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, there we go.
I had a chance to talk with Pablo Vimas of Regular Gardening with Embark segment about what you can get your favorite gardener here for Christmas. There are let's have this conversation. This is Gardening with Embark and Christmas gifts for gardeners. All right, it's time for Gardening with Embark. We've taken a little break, but we're coming back to talk to you again. And joining me, as always, is Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability.
Nice to be here.
It's December, and what week are we in now?
Week 49. Yeah, yes, four more weeks, and we are 52. So, yeah, we are looking forward for the end of this year and excited for a new gardening season.
Yeah. So it's a quiet time in the garden, but it's a good time to be thinking about both next year,
mm-hmm. Yep.
But also Christmas is coming up, and people may be thinking about what they can get for their friends and loved ones who enjoy the garden.
Oh yeah, that's a good question. So we gardeners really love lots of things. We are gadget people.
Yeah,
and
it's funny, you don't necessarily think of gardening as a gadget thing, but I imagine there's lots of handy tools.
Lots of handy tools that they come very useful once you are looking for a tool that can do the job that mm-hmm. needs to be done on the spot.
Yeah,
yeah, and so I have, for instance, we can have tools itself. Or we can have supplies. We yeah. also love some supplies.
Yeah.
And clothes always is welcome.
Yeah.
And then we also miscellaneous, like here and there, we would like to, well, we can give to gardeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can,
yeah.
I can share some of those ideas.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. So, for instance, for tools, all gardeners love a good pair of bypass pruners.
Yeah.
Never there is too many pruners because when you need it, they are all over the place. So a right. set of pruners. Pruners are leads that can cut half an inch twigs. Because, yeah. And January is a month that we spend. It's kind of a spring. Actually, January is a spring-like weather.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, sunny, cold, chilly. But we are in the garden trimming here, trimming there, pruning the. Yeah, so that's why it comes yeah. very handy. And with pruning, we go with a folding saw
yeah.
because we don't want to have those saws that are just hanging there, getting rusted. So a folding saw that we can keep it nice and clean and tidy, tucked away, and we can use. So, yeah, that's... And as I say, we as well like kind of be a compact multi-tool.
Mm-hmm.
No,
something you can fit in your pocket?
Yeah, something like, for instance, you have a nail in there that needs to be removed. Something is poking out from the garden beds, needs to be removed. So, yeah,
yeah.
It's very awesome to have something in your pocket that you can use immediately. And then, yes, we gardeners are most of the time on knees.
Yeah.
So a good set of knee pads. We
right.
go through them very quick because we are just... We'll, yeah, I very much use knee pads for everything because I work on my knees. Even
yeah.
if we are garden beds, 26 inches tall, I still
right.
go on my knees. Yeah,
yeah, because you don't want to be bent over
correct.
For long periods
good
of time.
Time.
That's going to get really uncomfortable. So really, you need to be down there.
Yes, yeah, so or a mat, kneeling mat. So that will be helpful.
Yeah.
I'm very much with knee pads because the mat, you need to lift it and drag it. And literally, you get tired like, all right.
Yeah, I can imagine that. He's like, oh, it's over there.
Yeah.
Now we got to go over and get it before I come back.
Yes, so you need pads there. Yeah.
I imagine most of the knee pads you find, and the kneeling pads presumably too, would all be sort of waterproof a bit, so you're not getting...
Yes, yeah. So there are different quality. Mm-hmm. There's one have a very rubbing, thick rubber cover over the knee pad, which is in fabric. Yeah. Yeah, so as you can see, we are collecting lots of tools, and those tools need to go somewhere.
Right, okay.
So a tool bag. Yeah. Personally, I carry all my tools with me because I visit garden to garden. Uh-huh. And I can, and so I have my own tool bag. Though you can see electricians or people come to do plumbing. Yeah. They have these small toolbags with all the gear in there, so it's the same for us. For gardeners, it's all stuck in there.
Right. So do you favor one with sort of slots for things and you know, where you tuck them in and they have a particular place in the bag?
Correct. So there is those bags with the pockets inside.
Yeah.
23 pockets. You fill them with all the things that you have all compact. So I don't spend much time looking where my tools are. I know that everything's in the bag.
So for you, and I imagine you have a fair number of tools.
I do,
But what sort of size dimension are you talking about? Because, getting something too small would be... people want to avoid that.
Yeah. No, not too small. It's something like you can... It's a backpack itself.
Okay.
Yes, it's a backpack size.
Right.
Yeah. And then you can get from, the construction sites, the toolboxes, as well as you can see, slowly we're getting into tools and power tools right now. So extra set of batteries is always welcome. For instance, if you have your weed whacker over this fall, so an extra set of batteries allows you to work 45 more minutes without having to say, I have to stop because I need to charge my battery. So, And for summer, throughout the year, a good harvesting basket.
Right.
So we always are looking for containers where we can keep our produce clean, and as well allows us to wash immediately before bringing home. I very much like to wash my produce in the garden. Mm-hmm. So all the dirt stays in the garden, no clogging the sink at home.
Yeah. Right. So what does that look like?
All the harvesting baskets have kind of a mesh. Mm-hmm. So the water just, or the dirt just goes through. So it's nothing solid.
Right.
Yeah. So as well allows us to rinse it. The water drains and the produce dries out very quickly.
Is that typically made of plastic or is it?
Typically made of plastic.
Yeah.
If you are a handyman and you want to do something, you can make as well lots of designs using wood and chicken mesh.
Right.
Then we can go to supplies.
Yeah.
We gardeners like to label everything. Mm-hmm. So we plant our seeds and a label goes in there.
Yeah,
and
those, a label.
Yeah. So plastic labels and Sharpies. We go with a ton of Sharpies.
Right.
So Sharpies is good for labeling anything that we start vegetables early in the season, in February. So we need something to write with.
And I imagine you can buy sort of little labels that at the garden store that maybe have a sticker or whatever?
Yes. I prefer the ones that are just a single, a small plastic label, flat.
Yeah.
So we can write in there, and the other thing is that I say, once you write with Sharpie, it will never go off.
Yeah.
There you find something. There is this easy off for cleaning your oven.
Uh-huh.
That is.
Oh,
just place some easy off in a tissue and rub it on your plastic label. And the Sharpie disappears, and you have a new label.
So you can reuse.
Reuse it.
Excellent.
Yes. So, after experimenting different products, cleaning products, I came up with that. I found out that this Easy Off is the best to clean anything. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. We also like twine. mm-hmm. or twine and a twine container. You know, we if we are harvesting herbs like yep. chives, better to make a bunch first, tie the bunch before cutting.
Right.
Yeah. So we go through twine quite a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, and we gardeners, particularly myself, during the summer, I go through a dozen of gloves, gardening gloves.
Yeah.
But those gardening gloves are very thin for winter.
Mm-hmm.
So in winter now, I use winter working gardening gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they are nice with fleece inside, mm-hmm. thermal fleece, and outside are covered with latex.
Right.
So they are waterproof. Warm, so I still can do my duties in the garden
yeah.
without having the regular garden gloves that they, once they get wet, the hands get cold
yeah.
and wet as well. And yeah, you
won't. Yeah, that's got to be so important in terms of being able to enjoy yourself
yes.
with the work you're doing in the cold weather.
Mm-hmm. So yes, a nice set of winter gloves for the garden. Yeah. yeah.
And then, of course, summer gloves for the summer.
For the summer, indeed.
Lighter gloves.
Yes, and yeah, so the gardening gloves we tend to wash quite often, mm-hmm. but yes, now and then you will leave forgotten in the sun, and when you go to collect them, they're all kind of the rubber, the latex kind of melts and becomes very sticky, and
yeah,
yeah that goes to the garbage bin. So that will be regarding supplies for clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
We gardeners tend to get a tan over the summer. All our forearms and arms are all tan, and lots of scratch because we need to reach here, reach there. We yep. scratch ourselves. So a set of arm sleeves,
mm-hmm.
good, is a good present.
Right.
And
so those are like sort of the ones you just sort of pull up.
Pull up, yes.
And they sort of go from the wrist to the shoulder.
Shoulder, yeah.
And they're sort of a tough material that really protects you from
correct.
That.
Correct. Tough material, yeah. And so if you're weeding and if you're close to sharp objects, you don't get a scratch, and at the same time, it protects you from the sun.
Right. Yeah, excellent.
So that's good. And the other is if you, like myself, I like to have a thick cotton working shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So a thick work shirt. So yeah. I just put on top of my T-shirt with the sleeves and yeah. I can go anywhere, even if it is stinging nettles,
yeah.
no problem.
Yeah.
My arms are protected. yeah.
Excellent.
So, and finally, we have other little things like we need to care after our hands, so cream for our hands, working hands, mm-hmm. cream. We gardeners love to hear from other gardeners and as well what is happening in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
So having a membership to a gardening magazine.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. You know, having four magazines in a year because that's how they do. And that's, you know, keep you with what's happening there, new technologies, new way of thinking, mm-hmm. new, yeah. So a membership to a gardening magazine.
Great.
And yeah, seeds are always welcome, and any container big enough for storing your seeds.
Yeah.
So even if it's an old tin of biscuits or cookies that you had in there, and a packet of seeds fits in there.
Yeah.
We always welcome because we need to keep store our seeds over the winter, and when we go to the garden, we know that there is a special. Object that holds the seeds and seeds don't get wet, they don't get spoiled. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, there are some ideas that, as you can see, there are so many ideas for gardeners, and we just love it to have things.
And those are some great ideas because, you know, there's things I should have obviously thought of, like the gloves, you know, or a hat, but a lot of things, you know, like the shears and the toolkit, and, the, you know, those are some great ideas that, you know, those of us who aren't experienced gardeners may not be thinking of for mm-hmm. the other people in our life who are out in the garden and getting them something that would be really nice that they're going to appreciate and use throughout the year.
Yes, we will be using throughout the year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So set of gloves, protection, tools.
Yeah.
And learning. We gardeners are curious people and we like to keep learning.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for bringing these ideas to us, Pablo.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to share some of those.
This is great. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM, and this is a segment that airs regularly on our Monday program, Gardening with Embark, with Pablo Vimas, and we'll be back in the new year when the gardening season picks up again. Thanks so much for coming to us today, Pablo. How do people find more about Embark?
Yeah, so Embark Sustainability Society is based in SFU, Burnaby campus, and you can find us in our website, embarksustainability.org, or through our social channels, Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much for all these terrific gift ideas.
Yeah.
And we'll be back in the new year.
That's right. Yes. See you next.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Lots of great ideas there if you've got a gardener in your life. Peter, anyway, 1966.
The persons of the year, 25 and younger. Now, what's interesting is that the draft, it was 2018 to 26. So I guess you were anticipating them being a year older and they go to Vietnam.
So this was anticipated future mover and shakers from identified in 1966?
But the title is 25 and under, and the cover has a man and a woman's behind him, and they have all of the races, the Oriental, and sort of in a kind of the conventional Norman Rockwell kind of. But the funny thing is that the draft was 18 to 26 for males. And yet they didn't. Okay, here
this
we
is
go.
The U.S. military draft.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, few of these young men and women have any doubt that they will one day be part of our society, he concluded. They wonder about where they will fit in, but not about weather. For the American fighting man in Vietnam, the weather does not even arise. Unlike his World War II or Korean predecessor, he has known all his life that he must serve a military tour of duty, indeed has planned it along with college, marriage, and a choice of vocation. From the moment he arises, usually aboard a comfortable troop ship, through his bivouac experience, under conditions less arduous than most stateside weekend hunting trips, to combat itself as intense as any in history, but it's also brief, he is supported by the best that his country can offer, even though it is to fight a mean and dirty war. He is swiftly moved into and out of combat in planes, helicopters, and trucks. He has a camera, transistor, hot meals, regular mail. If he is hit, he can be hospitalized in 20 minutes. If he gets nervous, there are chaplains and psychiatrists on call. It's little wonder that he fights so well, and quite comprehensible that his main concern in off-duty hours is aiding the Vietnamese citizen. Among the fighting men, there's a great deal of the Peace Corps ardor that animates their peers back home. Non-protest. In the U.S., for all the attention and sought by the picket lines, potential protest marchers, political activists on campus number at best 5% of the student bodies at such traditional cause consciousness universities as Chicago, Columbia, or California. Okay, it's not so great.
So that's a very sunny version of heading off to serve in Vietnam, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading directly from it. Sorry for reading, but I wanted it specific what it said.
Comfortable troop ship, fast medical care, in and out of combat in a jiffy.
I mean, it was, and things were going to happen shortly in that world.
That changed a lot.
Of course, here in Canada, we didn't have the draft.
So in that list of 25 folks under 25,
yes.
Do you recognize any of the names?
I mean, there was how many? A million? Millions? No, but the cover is just generic person. And he's the male is first, and then the woman's right behind him. It's a painting, right?
Right.
Then you have the other races, all male. behind them.
Right.
So it's kind of, you know, things used to be different. And actually, there were a lot of things for me. One thing that's kind of bad is all the neon signs that are gone, because we were second to Las Vegas in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Up until like maybe late 60s, early 70s. And there was a great Coca-Cola neon sign across the Burrard Bridge. And it was the Coca-Cola bottling plant was not as such in the downtown side. You crossed the bridge and it had like a totem pole.
Right.
And it was kinetic, which means that it moves. And how you make a neon sign move is that part of it is on, part of it is off.
Yeah.
And a good a kinetic sign always has something on,
yeah,
instead of just going on, off, on, off. And yeah, the last thing, the last one of these is at a bowling alley on Granville Street where you're going into the stairwell, 838 Granville.
Commodore Lanes, is that the one?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's on the ceiling, and it's probably from the Woodward's parking when they're pointing it.
Yeah.
And what's really neat about it is how it dances around. I don't know if you've seen it.
I think I have, but not for a while. It's been a while since I've been down to go bowling there.
So that's about the last of the actual kinetic signs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the thing about that studio, you know, like it's you know, across from the Vogue, yeah, is that they don't have the S is not completely has the neon working half the
right
time. Now, one thing that's good is the on Terminal and Main, Pacific Center, is it called, or
Pacific Central?
Yes, and sometimes
the
they have a
train
bit
station.
Sometimes they have a bit of problem. The it's not, but sometimes they got it.
Yeah,
and so that's, and also it's really good was the lighting. I want the Marine building to have the lighting at night because they're part of Power Smart. I think they should bring back that lighting because
right,
if you look at in New York City, the Empire Stadium, Empire State Building,
yeah,
has that lighting, and it makes us look bad because if we had the Marine building have the lighting that they used to have at night,
yeah,
and the actual Sun Tower too, it would look better. Yeah. So that's,
bring back the neon.
Well, we do have neon as such, but it's actually, but you need firms to
right
do it, and that is sort of lost now because they break down and you got to have them fixed. It's sort of kind of another era, like
all
a
right
lot of things are.
Well, that's our show for today. Stay tuned for Democracy Now. Peter and I will be back next
You're
week.
You're listening